Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
All right, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Buffalo Beat. My name is Joe Biscaglia. Thanks for joining me here today on this pre-draft episode. The draft is 1 week, 1 day away from happening. The Bills still have the 28th pick. Will they have it by the time they draft on that Thursday? We shall see. But because draft time is so much fun, I wanted to bring in a guest, someone who, in my opinion, has absolutely worked his ass off over the past decade. He's awesome at what he does, and he just and we didn't plan it this way, but he wound up having some great news that he shared yesterday, and that is none other than John Scott, who is the new announced Channel 2 sports director, WGRZ in Buffalo. John, thanks for jumping on the Buffalo Beat. It's the debut for you, and I swear I did not know this was happening. I did not know that this was happening for you. It's just inconspicuous timing. But yeah, thanks for coming on, man. And congrats.
100%. Thank you. It's, as we discussed before firing this up, it's been a long process. It's kind of been a not-so-secret to some circles that are close to it. But incredibly excited for the opportunity ahead. I've already been in the market for 10 years around the team. And so to take this step forward and join such a powerhouse at Channel 2, I'm incredibly excited. And that also means that on top of the new colleagues at Channel 2 I get to work with, I still get to be around all you guys on the beat. So it's super fun that I kind of get to continue to have it all. And I cannot wait to get started. And this is, as you've discussed on my previous podcast, this is like the best time of year. It's my favorite time of year because while I enjoy the season, let's be honest, now that it's 17 games, I mean, it kind of drags a little bit here and it's, you're just taking everything at face value. This is the time of year where it's fun. I mean, let's get crazy. Let's talk about what could happen and the endless possibilities. And I think the Bills are kind of in that boat of, I mean, who the heck knows what's going to happen 8 days from now?
Yeah, and that's I think the perfect place to start. I always love doing this around draft time because there are so many different things that you could think about in terms of what the Bills are doing, maybe their roster, what could happen within the draft. So as we sit here today, we're recording this Wednesday, April 17th. What is top of mind for John Scott as to what you have going on about the Bills?
It's what does Brandon Bean do in the first round? Mm. And I know I've heard you say it. I think the range of outcomes is profound, more so than we've had maybe the entirety of the Brandon Bean era as a general manager come draft time. It's clear they have a need. And it's wide receiver. It's been the talking point. It was the talking point prior to the Stephon Diggs trade. And now that's just been amplified. But at what lengths does Brandon Bean go to satisfy the need? And that will show us, one, how big of a need he truly thinks it is. And also, where he evaluates the draft as a whole. There's just so many ways that he could go about it. There's three guys at the very top of the list that he'd have to move hell and high water to go get in all likelihood. And it's not something that as much of a wheeler and dealer as Bean has been on draft day and draft weekend, he values first round picks. He values high picks greatly. His moves are always marginal to move up a couple spots to nab somebody. It's never been this big swing where he's mortgaging the future outside of trading a first for Stephon Diggs, which was an immediate impact. I know what I'm getting in this type of player. That's why he went that route rather than rolling the dice for a Justin Jefferson or whomever else was in that loaded wide receiver class as well. So I don't know exactly where I've landed yet. I just continue to go back and forth. There was a point not too long ago, I'm thinking he's going big. Like, he's going big. He gets this second round pick from Minnesota in the Diggs trade, and that's probably going to be a really high pick, and he can use that. And it maybe works to where if somebody falls 10, 11, whatever, he could justify it to himself. I think as we get closer, though, I'm maybe back to more of the, maybe he'd be more comfortable with a mid-round pick to get to the teens area and get the guy that he and the organization targets is maybe number four, number five on the list of wide receivers that they feel, hey, we don't got to give everything up to go get this guy, but we still feel really confident that they could blossom into not only an immediate impact guy, but also have a very high ceiling.
Yeah, I think what you said about this being a need before the Diggs trade even happened is an important one to establish, because not only have they been thinking about it, has everyone been talking about it, but like, they were likely going to prepare for the future at receiver at some point, and they needed to make some kind of investment at receiver because they haven't under Brandon Bean. The last time they took a receiver on day one or day two, well, actually day two, was Zay Jones, and Brandon Bean wasn't a part of that draft. That didn't work out great, but that doesn't mean that they're strictly against the idea of investing in a receiver that early on in the process. But that's why when the Stephon Diggs trade happened, it completely opened things up to not only taking one early, which I think they might have done if Stephon Diggs was still here, but also to taking one later on in the draft too, to double dip and do the same thing that they did in 2020 when they drafted Gabe Davis and Isaiah Hodgins, but this one to a higher degree, to where maybe they make the Gabe Davis into the first or second round pick, and then, you know, have the Isaiah Hodgins be like a fourth or fifth round pick, and still addressing their depth in that capacity. But yes, the move up idea is fascinating, because what will Brandon Bean do when he's excited about a player? And they view wide receiver as a premium position. That much is clear. They, like you pointed out, they traded away their first round pick for Stephon Diggs. It was the move that they needed to make at the time, because at that point, Josh Allen was not the established guy. He was still coming into his own. He needed someone established to push him over the top. And Diggs also needed a quarterback that was better than what he had in Minnesota too. And so it was a mutually beneficial relationship. But now, Josh, it's a completely different point in their build, because Josh is the guy. He's a top five quarterback, top three, it depending on who you ask. And that's why the idea of maybe trading that pick, the 28th pick, for someone more established doesn't hold as much weight as maybe it once did. So this is all a big circle to get back to the trade-up point, because how much is he willing to mortgage? The first round pick, trading that away for one of those top three guys is a fascinating thing to me, because Neighbors and Adunze, they don't have a shot at Marvin Harrison. Let's be clear. One of those two guys, though, Neighbors and Adunze, they have elite potential in the NFL from everything that I've seen, everything I watch from them. But how is that worth another first round pick next year when you're basically selling that pick for 50 cents on the dollar, because you have to have that degrading in value from one year to the next? So what in terms of comfortability, what if it's you and, you know, you have to kind of channel Brandon Bean here, what are you more comfortable with, going up and getting one of those top guys, or maybe sending away a second round pick to get someone who's maybe not as well refined, like a Brian Thomas Jr. Out of LSU, but still has some potential and is a bit more boom bust?
This is also an exercise in really forecasting the future. He's looking at the roster after this season and saying, what is the next wave of younger and cheaper and the route that I have to go? you could look at cornerback, which is certainly another premium position that they have placed incredible value on over the time of McDermott and Bean. And Rasul Douglas, as of right now, is a free agent after the season. Christian Benford, his time is coming up here in a couple of years here. You don't know what you have in Kyrie Elam. He's almost like the wild card in that capacity. Maybe that late first round, because you're thinking, even in a year this season where people maybe believe they might take their step back of sorts, you're still probably picking in the 20s. So what are you getting down there at that level? Okay, is it worth it to maybe not have a shot at filling that position if we know we hit it with at wide receiver, which is another premium blue chipper? Consider what the price is for wide receivers these days. If you can lock someone in cost controlled, does that factor into it's worth it to give a first round pick? If we know this guy is ultimately going to be a top five receiver in the league, you're going to have to pay him that whenever their contract's up, but we're controlled for 5 years. That factors into it. There's other, obviously the defensive line, they're still going to have to address moving forward. So it's being taking positions that he's openly valued and saying, all right, is this one at wide receiver? Is this prospect worth it to know that I'm not going to have a shot at other blue chippers potentially to fill holes at other key positions in 2025? I think for these three, they're so universally believed to be great. And I'm, no one's can't miss, but so universally believed to be, yeah, these are the guys that I think it's worth the risk if he truly believes that the gap between those three, especially with instantaneous success, is wide enough between, the again, the Brian Thomas, the Adonai Mitchell, the other guys that are on that list. I think it's worth it for them, because who is the most important player in your organization? It is Josh Allen. And I think some people look at it and say, well, Brady made it work with not great wide receivers. And sometimes Peyton Manning did the same thing. And look at Patrick Mahomes. It's like, okay, but does that make it the right way to act? Like, I think the purpose of the exercise here is to always take the pressure and make Josh Allen's life easier. And so if you can do that instantaneously with a young guy that you're going to connect for five, maybe the rest of Josh Allen's career as his top target, I do think that that is something that I think I would be comfortable if it's one of those three guys. But how high? If you're going top 10, I mean, now you're adding in this year's first, next year's first, probably maybe even that second that from Minnesota. Now you're really starting to take away from building the team that Brandon Bean wants to and how he wants to do it moving forward.
I think the sweet spot for them to get one of those three guys is probably somewhere between 7 and 10, where it's actually realistic if they wanted to do it. Just based on, you know, everyone has their own chart. Some people in the NFL still use Jimmy Johnson, even though it's completely outdated. Some people use a hybrid Jimmy Johnson chart. Some people use the Rich Hill trade value chart, which is what I do, just because it's based on recent trades and establishing values from that perspective. So if you use like recent data, then ideally you could get into that 7 to 9 range, because you're not trading with the Jets to get to number 10. And I look, probably the two most glaring spots that they could move into that would make sense for the organizations that are there are Atlanta at 8 and Chicago at 9, because Atlanta has invested a ton of resources into their skill position players recently. You know, they have a really good offensive line, and that's kind of a sweet spot for offensive linemen. And, you know, could they use a cornerback? Is a cornerback really worth it at that point? There's an argument for them to move down. Same thing with Chicago. Chicago, they have invested a ton into their, I guess, overall offensive output. They're going to draft Caleb Williams. That's the worst kept secret in the draft right now. And they already invested in DJ Moore as a receiver. Do they really need to go and take another receiver to add with DJ Moore? And they only have, I think, like 4 or 5 picks in this year's draft. So it would absolutely help them. And they just had the whole thing work out in their favor, where they traded their top pick last year, got a number one from Carolina that winds up becoming number one. And so they might be like, all right, we're playing with house money now. Let's just get another number one. So I haven't done the trade values on that number nine pick, but that's a very interesting spot to potentially move into, because one of Odunze or Neighbors could be there. And if you look at the two, they are much different players from one another, even though they're both extremely talented. Like Neighbors, the yards after catch to me is just screams Buffalo Bills. And what Brandon Bean would be interested in, even if he's not the prototypical fit for X receiver. We don't even know if the Bills want to go for prototypical X receiver anymore. That might be the new vision of their offense, to try and make themselves less predictable and have someone that can line up at X, at Z, at slot, and move them all over the field, as opposed to just having the Gabe Davis type locked in at X receiver and then Diggs either in the slot or at Z and going about your business that way. Odunze is more of that guy, the X receiver type. The yards after catch is not as good as Neighbors. And that's why I continuously look at Neighbors as the one that I would favor in terms of the Bills over Odunze, just because that's something that they have stressed for years on end now. You have heard them so many times, just like I have. Like, run after catch. They want rack. They want all of that. And they don't have it. Like, none of their receivers have that right now. Shakir is fine. He's more of a catch and fall. And if he's open, then he can maneuver his way down the field. Curtis Samuel is more of a low A dot sort of guy. And I'm not really sure that he's going to be pushing the ball down the field all that often. So what do you have? You need someone who can potentially dissuade teams from playing that cover two shell and have to take more chances because you have explosive playmakers. And that, to me, screams Malik Neighbors in a trade-up, but he might be gone before 8 or 9 even happens, because it seems like he's a perfect fit for the Giants too.
Yeah, the skill set there is spot on. Because you're right, the league has now transitioned to taking away the deep shots, taking the ball down the field, especially for offenses like the Bills. So work Dalton Kincaid and add in a dynamic wide receiver or multiple ones. And now Joe Brady has his spin with new weapons. Josh Allen has a new look that he really hasn't had in his career. And the Bills offense can absolutely evolve with the times. And I think it certainly needs to do that. You can throw in James Cook into the mix too, as a guy who can kind of do some of those dynamic playmaking things underneath out of the backfield as a pass catcher. And so I agree. I think speed. I mean, when we've done previews or done podcasts or talked about the Chiefs matchups or facing the Dolphins, what is the scariest thing fans seem to worry about? It's the Dolphins speed with Jalen Waddle and Tyreek Hill. It's dealing with Ja'Marr Chase and these dynamic wide receivers. And yeah, Diggs was a great, great player for the Buffalo Bills who could dominate a game, but he never put fear into the opponents like that. And they never had anybody else even remotely close to that level in any capacity outside of maybe Cole Beasley, who you didn't necessarily fear, but you knew that he was almost like an automatic, like, this is easy. I'll get 5 to 6 yards every single play. So I agree with you that if you're going to go up for one of these three, yeah, Neighbors is would be great because he has that type of skill set. And to be honest with you, I don't even think that maybe, granted, depending on how many picks they give up, I'd do it again a little bit later. I don't think that even if you make the big splash and you move up and you take a big dog, I still don't think that should take them out of the mix, that even again, if it's a fourth rounder or something, dive into that pool again and just get faster. Because I think oftentimes fans will look at the roster and Khalil Shakir is a nice player. I think he's fine, but I think he has a ceiling. That's a reason why he was a fifth round pick. I think it would be silly to be like, well, I don't want to block this guy, or I don't want this guy to block Khalil Shakir. Or I don't want the, what about Justin Shorter? What about Curtis Samuel? They just paid him. Just flood it with talent, because a lot of these guys, I think, are more short-term solutions where they need to continue to find the more longer solutions with the skill set that they have, as you indicated, have been banging the table to implement more of into their offense. And that's yak.
Mm-hmm. This is an aside, but don't you love the Justin Shorter hive? Like, it is real out there. And He's basically the new Isaiah Hodgins, if we're being honest. But yeah, you brought up his name, and I'm like, yeah, I get asked about him probably once every 2 or 3 days. Like, hey, is he going to fit in? And they're not banking on it. That's
I mean, he falls now in line of a great lineage of Dez Lewis and Isaiah Hodgins and many other guys over the course of at least the 10 years that I've been doing it. You go back longer of, oh, I remember this guy, or I kind of liked him in preseason, or yeah. I remember reading about how he was the number one recruit out of high school and he could run fast and all of that. It's not knocking Shorter, Justin yeah. Shorter. Who knows what he can be, but let's not use in the thinking of don't trade this or don't get this. Because yeah. you have this late day three selection that you're curious about and you'll just talk yourself into because you read a couple of nice things about him from years ago.
Yeah, he's a bubble guy, and he was a day three receiver pick in a bad receiver class last year. So that's how I would sum it up. And more than anything, I would look at him as a potential replacement for Saran Neal more so than a Gabe Davis. That's because he's special teams heavy. Anyway, that's enough about Justin Shorter.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
I wonder about the idea of if they would actually move up for Odunze, because he's still an incredible athlete and he's still a great player. I love him as a prospect. It just depends on what you're looking for in terms of your potential number one receiver. And does he give you some after the catch? Yeah, absolutely. Like, he's not like, oh, I'm going to catch this and I'm going to fall down completely because I don't know how to use my legs. Like, that's not him. He's a good player. But if you want to find someone to take you to that next level, in terms of being able to challenge a defense after you get the ball in their hands, that's probably not his strongest suit. That leads me to Brian Thomas Jr., because he has that. He also has the size that Malik Nabers doesn't. But he is also a lot more raw than Malik Nabers. Like, can he fit in at X receiver? Yes. I think he can fit in over at Z receiver too. But I mean, super impressive to run what he did at the combine. 4.33 speed. At almost 6'3", 209 pounds. Like, the guy is just super impressive, but there's projection here. It's more boom bust. But ideally, you could get him without giving up your first next year. And so that leads to kind of a dilemma here. Like, do you sit there and say, all right, I really love Malik Nabers, but it would cost me the first. I really like Brian Thomas, and I'm excited about him, although I'm not as sure about him, but it only costs a second. It's a dilemma if they are even thinking about trading up, but it's a dilemma that's like, okay, there's a suitable outcome here if they don't move, as you called it, hell and high water to get up to a top 10 pick.
One thing Brandon Bean has shown draft weekends throughout his time is a lot of faith in the coaching staff and organization's ability to develop raw talent. They take guys that are not finished products that they deem have higher ceilings that maybe because they're not as refined, that's why they fall to the where they're picking in the late first round and some of these other rounds. But look at someone like Spencer Brown. That's a guy who was not a finished product. Yes, he wasn't a first-round pick, but they're thinking, okay, we love the body. We love the athleticism. We could turn him into a steal as a third-round right tackle. Greg Rousseau, he wasn't refined. Oh, he's a 6'7", super long guy. We feel like we get him into our building with our D-line group, our defensive guys. We could do that. The issue is it's worked, but it's never reached like super ceiling, super over the top. Right. And you're also then, I don't want to use the term wasting years or wasting time, but you're not maximizing this 5-year rookie window. And for a team that, yeah, it's going to have a transitional year, I think they're not throwing it away. So having these years where it's okay, you're getting something, but it's more the prototypical rookie season with the lumps and all of that. I wish they'd maybe go for more, this is what the guy is. Yeah, maybe he doesn't have as higher of a ceiling, but let's not mess around with the what ifs as much as it is. The draft is a lot of what ifs, but I'm not saying I'm opposed to a Brian Thomas. I think that is a great pick. I mean, he's not as big of a project, for lack of a better term, as maybe there certainly are other prospects in this. So I'm not afraid of it, but just in general, that's just something that I would like to see this year. Maybe they get away from, and instead of saying, oh, here's AJ Epenesa, let's completely change his body and turn him into a different player than he was in college, we'll just draft the guy and let him be the player that he was in college. Kyir Elam is another example of this. Like, you drafted a press corner that you wanted to fit into a zone scheme, and we understand where that's out right now. I just don't want them, whichever route they go, to draft a guy and try to make them something that they're not right now. I mean, you want guys to become more well-rounded, but if Brian Thomas is this certain type of wide receiver and you want to trade up and get him, that's fine, but let him be that type of wide receiver, and the list goes on with that. That's why I think, I know some people like Xavier Legette and things like that, maybe he's another one of these guys that, okay, they have a great skill set. He fits kind of the bucket of, oh, we're going to take a chance on this guy because we believe in our draft and development program that we have here. But at what cost is that going to be of what are you going to get this year? What are you going to get that year? I think, again, that goes back to the trade up talk that we had of, all right, where do they believe 2024 is for them and the absolute necessity to get impactful play out of the wide receiver, top wide receiver position, the Diggs replacement. And if they think they can maybe, at least for this season, make it more of a collective like Kansas City has kind of done, and maybe you get the back end, like Rashee Rice shot up the back end of the rookie season. If that's maybe what they're banking on, then I think this Brian Thomas, Adonai Mitchell, like this realm of the receivers is certainly a route that would be reasonable.
Yeah. I think that what might force Bean's hand to, let's say the top 10 is just too cost prohibitive for him, what might force his hand to go get a Brian Thomas Jr. is kind of what you were alluding to. Like, they're still going to allow him to come in and be him. Like, he lined up at the spot where they would ideally use him right away. But they would also, I think some of the projection, and one of his biggest knocks is that he has a limited route tree. But they have also done a good job with that in the past with a guy like Gabe Davis. And Gabe Davis is not the same athlete as Brian Thomas Jr. It's not even close. So you have the thing I look for in scouting profiles and watching players is like, okay, there's gotta have it skill sets, and there's, it'd be nice, but we can work with it. And to me, the route running nuance, because he's still a good route runner. Like, it's not as though he's just like rounding all his cuts and he's completely tipping his hand to the defense, but you can work with what he does. And then the other thing is blocking. Like, he's shown to be a good blocker when he puts his mind to it. And that's something that they can develop over time. Like, those are nice to haves. But the other stuff we're talking about, run after catch, speed, size, go up and get it, take the top off of defense, has literally all of it. And I think there is from what I watched, because I went through and I watched all the receiver prospects this year, to me, there is a drop-off after the top three to Brian Thomas, and there's a drop-off after Brian Thomas to a whole big clump of another receivers. I'm not an Adonai Mitchell guy. He's not exactly my cup of tea as a receiver. I wonder what he's going to be in the NFL. His profile is one that does not, it can translate, but sometimes it has difficulties translating. Like, his yards per route run in college, I think the best he had was like a 1.7 or something like that. And that's usually a pretty great determiner of success at the next level. And everyone else has over twos, 2.5s, threes, all of this other stuff. And I just worry about him, that he has the size, he has the speed, but does he play to the size? Does he play to the speed on tape? That's my concern. But he's still a good prospect. And if they get him at 28, great. Because you can work with that. But Brian Thomas Jr. to me is someone that could be a number one in a system. And I don't have that same conviction over Adonai Mitchell. So that's why, to me, when you have all of these workable traits, it's like, okay, if as long as you don't have to get up to like 12 or 13 and give up potentially your first round pick next year, and it's like the back half of the top 20, I think that Bean would think long and hard about doing that sort of thing.
This is the most likely, I think, scenario. And how often, now granted, I actually think Brandon Bean is very forthcoming, maybe more so than other general managers, of his line of thinking. When he's done these like minimal move ups with Kyrie Elam, even Dalton Kincaid, it's often he comes out and says, this is the last person, like, you know, the group, you know, in the tiering system, they were running out. Like, Kyrie was the last guy in their cornerback group that they wanted. So they went up and got him. Kincaid, they were concerned. They wanted him as a playmaker. And I think because the wide receivers went, things like that. So if they have it tiered similarly to you, and certainly the three, I think, would be up there. If Brian Thomas is the top guy in that next tier, to me, I do agree. As long as it maybe cost that second that they got in the Diggs trade. And it's, we'll give you this first, next year second from the Diggs trade, and then, you know, whatever, pick swaps later or whatever. I think that's reasonable and something that allows him to still address some of those holes that are maybe coming down the pike that we discussed, corner, more defensive line, things like that, in the middle rounds, and still get a guy that can satisfy the now and later at the wide receiver position of Brian Thomas. To me, this, if he views Thomas this way, and maybe there's some other wide receivers that he views in tier two, that's probably where I think I would be most comfortable saying this is the route he's going to go next week.
Yeah. There's just so many ways that they could do it. Like, this is the scenario I want to get into next, because there is that clump of players, at least to me, it would almost make more sense. And I do wonder if Adonai Mitchell is even going to be on the board at 28. To me, it might almost make more sense to either do a trade down, which doesn't seem all that likely from a Brandon Bean perspective, or just wait until 60 to see what falls to them at that point. So let's say they do wait until 60 for a receiver. Let's go back to 28 and let's talk about something that's not receiver. Make the case for the position that you think is the strongest bet to be at 28 if the board does not play out the way they want it to at receiver.
I think you hear so often from both Sean and Brandon that their belief in the defensive front. And yeah, you get Daquan Jones back and they re-sign AJ Epenesa, but there's still a lot of room there that I think could be improved. Certainly Von Miller's on a prove it deal of sorts this year, and it may be the last one. And even still, if Von Miller looks a little bit closer to what he did before his injury, they still need more. I mean, relentless pass rushing against elite quarterbacks is the way. And that's the path for this team to not only get through the AFC, but to try to win a Super Bowl. So to me, I've almost been preparing, this is more so before the Diggs trade, but now it defensive end, edge rusher, even interior, because you have Daquan. I know they made some other signings. You just gave Ed an extension, but they love a heavy rotation across that group. And I think to continue to flood it with top talent is of high value and priority to Brandon Bean. If it's not first, I think maybe day one or day two, I think edge rusher is coming in the books. I do think that they also could continue to look at corner because they don't know what they have with Kyir Elam. And as I indicated, do you re-sign a 30-plus-year-old Rasul Douglas after this season? Is he the same player he was when they acquired him? What do you do with Kyir Elam this year? What do you do with him moving forward? How much is Christian Benford going to cost? I mean, they have gotten decimated at that spot so many seasons that you're looking like, who the heck is even playing out there? I think they would love to add some good talent at that position too. I just don't know if the value would fit at the end of the first round, but I would say defensive line in some capacity, if it's not wide receiver, would be my bet.
Yeah, those are strong points, and I think there's going to be some good edge rushers available potentially right in that range too, depending on how teams view the medicals for Latu. He might be someone of value. He has a little bit shorter arms than they're used to, but still, he's someone that has the type of game that they're looking for. Everywhere that I look is like likening him as a prospect to Jalen Phillips, his game, and I'm like, oh, the Bills love Jalen Phillips, so that's a pretty good one. Jared Verse is another one who could be there that maybe they would be into. The one that, you know, fans absolutely hated me when I did this in the in our most recent beat writer mock draft at The Athletic a few weeks ago, but Darius Robinson out of Missouri is someone that I think the Bills would be very interested in just because he's a bigger bodied guy, but he has long arms. He's based out of defensive end. You can also kick him inside. It's essentially a juiced up Boogie Basham. And that I think would provide a lot of value to them, but fans absolutely roasted me for that pick because like, oh my God, a tweener defensive lineman. He's not, he's a versatile defensive lineman more than anything. But that's someone I think could be of value at that 28th spot. I think what you pointed out about cornerback is interesting. I think they may be looking at 2024 as a determining year to what to do in 2025, whether it be to re-sign Rasul Douglas to maybe a mini contract extension or to go into 2025 with Benford and Kyir Elam as your starters. They want to find out about Elam. That's pretty clear. Unless they use him as a part of a move to trade up to go get a receiver, not out of the realm of possibilities, probably not going to happen since they haven't addressed a cornerback at all, or really a substantial cornerback in this offseason. So trying to figure out which of these two guys is going to be a starter in 2025 is a pretty interesting thing. I could see cornerback, but I do think drafting someone that gives you the option at cornerback or safety would almost be of more value. And Cooper DeJean of Iowa, to me, is very compelling for them because he has the natural instincts they're looking for, comes from a zone-heavy scheme. Littered throughout his game and profile is his ability to play either corner or safety at the next level. It'd be a free safety in there. He would slot in right next to Taylor Rapp, which is what they have a need for right now. And you're addressing a position that you believe to be of high value in your scheme, too. Not to say that he's going to be there because he blew away his pro day and he was an incredible athlete. And I know some are like, oh, he's a cornerback. But yeah, the Bills might want to draft him and just see what happens. Like, you have a role for him right away at safety. And let's say Elam doesn't show well and that Douglas wants too much money. There's really no harm in shifting him to cornerback and starting him alongside Christian Benford in 2025 and beyond. So that way you find value in your first round pick by playing him. And if you're drafting a corner only, then how's he seeing the field? Like, is he pushing Christian Benford to the sidelines? Probably not. Is he pushing Rasul Douglas to the sidelines? Probably not. So those are some of the positions that are on my mind. The other one is center, because I do think they view that as a premium position. And I think there's going to be some interesting prospects there. Like Powers Johnson from Oregon is someone that fits them well. Frazier out of West Virginia, not as great of an athlete, but a strong wrestling background. And Sean McDermott loves a wrestling background. Graham Barton, too, out of Duke. If he's even on the board, he's someone I think could be a bit of their cup of tea, I should say.
What? Right. And just because it's been said and put out there after they got rid of Mitch Morse that Connor McGovern's going to play center and all of that, that's not set in stone.
Nope.
Like, why it's – I go back to – and I didn't even realize this – talking to Deion Dawkins in training camp last year, he made it clear he literally in his entire career has never gone back-to-back years with the same person starting alongside him at left guard. And if you can, after the offensive line – played well last year. Deion had maybe his best season ever. If you could keep that left side of the line with him and McGovern at tackle and guard and slide in a rookie if they earn it, like Osiris Torrance did, to be your center, I mean, why would you hesitate to do that? Mm-hmm. And anyone even if it's a guard center combination, and then you just kind of figure out, all right, does this guy fit better at guard? Does this guy fit better at center? I mean, I wasn't here, but you certainly remember Eric Wood was drafted as a guard.
Yep.
And he played his first year at that position and ultimately kicked in to be a Pro Bowl center. So they love their position flexibility. This idea that their line is going to be Deion Dawkins, David Edwards, and Connor McGovern to start things off, I think it would be foolish if that's what you're locking in at this point. And they'll address the position, I agree with you, one way or the other. It doesn't mean they don't have faith in Connor McGovern, but it gives them kind of house money of sorts to do what they love to do in training camp and play a million different combinations on the offensive line. We all overreact to who's at the ones and twos for the first 3 weeks. And then it's, oh, okay, we kind of see what they got here. I agree with you. I think even if it's not the first, I think interior offensive line, absolutely something that's probably high on their checklist of positions to address.
Yeah, and I'm with you. There's a few things that fly in the face of that being their starting line. That being that Connor McGovern, he was above average. Like, he wasn't great last year. He's not a good run blocker. And he hasn't played center exclusively since college. So that's been a long time in between now and then. And he hasn't really done it all that much at the pro level. And you want to see just a little bit more out of him rather than pushing him into one of your marquee offensive line positions. It's left tackle and it's center. Those are your top two. They have invested in those time and time again throughout their build since Bean and McDermott have arrived. So do you necessarily just want to go about it that way? That leads to some questioning. David Edwards' contract, it's not one that screams starter. Like, his entire contract is worth $6 million. So it's a two-year, $3 million a year sort of deal. And to me, that's someone that is just like, okay, if he needs to start, great, but probably better as that sixth offensive lineman role that they would like to have. So if they whiff on wide receiver, I think those are some good evidence as to what they could push into, and it still addresses the offense, because all of this offseason, you know, people have been worried that they're going to go defense in the first round because they've always gone defense in the first round. Addressing a center is a vital piece to your offense, even if it's not receiver. It's so important. And if you can find someone that can be your long-term center in front of Josh Allen on a cost control deal, because centers are not cheap anymore, that has a lot of value. And absolutely, they are going to address it at some point, because their depth on the interior line is nothing to write home about. Right now, they have Alec Anderson and Will Clapp and Kevin Jarvis. Like, the due respect, Alec Anderson made the team last year. Will Clapp might not make the team. Kevin Jarvis was a practice squad guy all last year. Like, they don't have much in terms of their interior offensive line. So they will be adding at some point. All right, John, I'm putting you to it. We're getting near the end of the show here. If you were, with the caveat that we're 8 days away, what is your gut feeling that's going to go down on Thursday night with Brandon Bean as he approaches one of the most pivotal picks in his tenure?
I think he trades up into teens area, okay, to get, whether it be Brian Thomas, I think that's maybe the most likely. There's probably a couple other names, you know, whatever flavor that they truly like. But I think the action is going to be, we're not going to sit back. We may not mortgage the future, but we're willing to give up some assets here that are reasonable to go get a guy that is going to help us now and certainly in the future with a high ceiling. And so I think mid-teens move up, that still gives him the good amount of bevy of picks that he has and loves and values so much, and probably won't have to give up that first. I just think that currency is so valuable to him that anything else is probably on the table, future picks, second rounders or whatever. I just feel like, even though you expect it to be in the 20s and they would hope even later, I feel like he's not willing to move off of that for what, regardless of what the evaluations and how universal they are, is still a guess. It's still a projection. Mm-hmm. I think he's willing to maybe give up that sort of an asset like he did in the Diggs trade years ago for more of, I've seen it, I believe it, we're not waiting around, it's immediately insert and we're busting loose. That's where I think he'd be willing to go off with a one. So that's why I'm going to go mid-teens, kind of move up, that kind of finds the middle ground there.
Yeah, that scenario is actually what our draft expert here at The Athletic, Dane Brugler, did in his most recent 7 round. He had them moving up to 17, just ahead of Cincinnati, to take Brian Thomas Jr. and giving up a 2025 second, the pick number 133, which is a fourth, and pick number 144, which is a fifth. And it comes out even on the Rich Hill trade value chart. So it definitely doable. But yeah, I think that's a very, very plausible scenario for what will wind up happening. And by the way, I do allow you to reserve the right to change your mind, since everything is changing one day to the next at this point in time. We are in peak smokescreen season, trying to sift through all of it. I hate the word smokescreen, but I just use it. I don't care. I actually love smokescreen season, because trying to figure out what's real and what's not is one of my favorite things to do. I like puzzles. It's me. It's the challenger in me, John. It's the challenger.
Yes. You'd be great with Wes, and and you could really, you know, he may yell at you though with your endurance. So you ran a marathon, I believe, or a half.
I did a half. Have it. I mean, I've got a 7-month-old now. So lo and behold, I have not been exercising nearly as much as I would like to. But yeah, it's yeah, I'm a challenger at heart. That's for sure. Me and John and I both love the challenge. We both love the NBA. We are constantly talking about it in the media room. If you're wondering what we talk about, that's basically it. And if you all are challengers too, enjoy season 40. That's all I have to say. All right, John, this has been great. Thanks so much for jumping on. Congrats again. Amazing news. And we'll have to do this again sometime.
100%. Thanks for having me on.
All right. So that'll do it for this episode of the Buffalo Beat. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And we will talk to you in draft week. See you then.